And I can assure you that I shall never ever forget what goes on today, because I'm certain of one thing, and that is that the lawlessness that goes on today is caused through indulgent parents who, when they were in children, they were children, were indulged by their parents and their parents before them. Because it must be realised that from 1914 onwards, when parental control went out of the window, women had to go into munition factories, the children were fobbed off with two or three shillings to spend, get out of my way sort of business. There was no home life. Well, when the war ended, this situation continued on, because the parents, who were children at that time, they became parents and they indulged their parents. And of course, with the advent of the Second World War, that really reached a new high, because indulged parents were indulging children. Children were growing up, and the same pattern was being carried on and on. And that is why today you can come to the lowest and the poorest localities here or anywhere, and you will see every child has got a new bicycle that costs £40. They use them for a little while and throw them in the gutter when they don't want to use them, because mum will soon give them £5 to go and get something else. And it's small wonder that what is going on now, unless it's stopped, the world will become a jungle. And as far as teaching is concerned, the teachers who are coming out of university, they themselves are lacking in education and knowledge. They might have passed in some particular level, that's quite a possibility, but they are not teachers. You can't become a teacher by swatting up and reading a subject in a university. You can only become a teacher if you are dedicated, if you have the mentality and the personality, and that you are a captain of your own soul, and that you don't overindulge yourself in anything that normally people would do. And I say again that in my estimation, the crumbling of the British Empire is rather closer at hand than many people realise. And even as Gibbon wrote The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, I wonder who will write The Rise, Decline and the Near Defunct Fall of the British Empire. Could it be H. A. Taylor, the historian? It's just a thought. But I say again, coming back to reality, until the police themselves are given greater powers of apprehension, and until magistrates stop giving foolish sentences for hideous crimes, there's not the slightest doubt that murders will increase, that crime will increase, and as I said before, the world will become a jungle. And I want you to know, Mr. Brown, what I've written on, or what I've spoken on this tape, is something that I'd like you to know. But I would be very grateful if you did not disclose my name if you wish to make use of any of this tape that I'm sending you. And I hope sincerely that your program, I know that you're quite a good producer and you'll put out a very good program. That, to my mind, is something I will understand. But for my part, the day I left the army, I wanted to forget war, and I've forgotten it for all those years, nearly 60 years until today. And I'm telling you that I'm not interested in war programs at all. I'm not interested in detective stories, but I'm very interested indeed in nature, because I think nature is the creator. There is no other. And if you live by nature, you can live a full and happy life. But I'm saying again to you, I have no notes of any kind. What I've put on that tape is as it's come to my mind, as I've been sitting here dictating it. And my hesitancy in the early part of the tape was due entirely to the fact that I was trying to collect my thoughts in order to make my tape a little bit interesting. And if you feel you'd like to edit it or use any part of it, you're quite at liberty to do so. But I would like to tell you that as far as I'm concerned, I have no room for politics, because that's a dirty word, and politicians, to my mind, are outside the pale. This is my view, and there's not the slightest doubt about it. That coming back to reality once more, I'm certain of one thing, and that is that it's quite clear to me that the Soviet Union are bent on domineering the world. They've been doing it for years by peaceful penetration, but by the build-up of submarines, tanks, conventional weapons, quite apart from nuclear weapons, there's only hope for us is that if they did embark on the invasion of the West, they would still have another front in China to contend with. And I feel instinctively that if we follow and keep in step with China, the Russian menace will gradually retreat. This is my view. And it's absurd for people to start whistling in the dark, because that will serve no useful purpose at all. And our economy, unfortunately, does not permit us to embark on wide-scale armament programs again. But it must be remembered that when Chamberlain stood up in Parliament after coming back from that ill-fated journey to Munich and said, "We Parliament today has voted £5,000, 5,000 million to the defence programme of this country, against which no enemy would dare to go." Yet within 2 years of making that speech or utterance, when the German bombers came over in London, there were about 3.7 guns available to counter them. What happened to the money? What happened to the munitions? This is a thing that has never been questioned and never been asked. But I say to you again, that what I've recorded here is a dictation from my mind, which is pretty good, because I could go on telling you the names of towns on the battlefront: Bellecourt, Bretoncourt, Proven, Bourlon Wood, Havrincourt Wood, Vimy, you name it. I've been there and I know what they are and I know all about it. But Nail as well as another one. But I still have no desire to witness these things. And as somebody remarked in Proven on one occasion when I was there, Sergeant, if you like to go in a cafe in Poppering, you can get a jolly fine couple of ASC rashers of bacon, which come up on the supply column at a reasonable price. This went on while the war was on. Nothing ever happened. But we in the line, who should have had the food and should have had the money, we were the people that were denied it and deprived of it. And it must be realised, of course, that when it's a question of having a loaf of bread come up and we cut it so that it was 1/26 men to a loaf, and a packet of cigarettes between three people, you can understand what must have happened to supplies en route to the trenches. And here again I say, nothing was ever done about that, and I never forget. But in conclusion, Malcolm Brown, I say to you, all success to you and your documentary about the Somme. But the crowning tragedy was, as I've explained before, not only was a terrible wastage of life when the push came on July 1, 1916, but to think that 2 years later we were to fight again on the same bloodstained soil and have to go through all that agony again. And this obviously due to military inefficiency. There's no question about it. And until Marshal Foch got down to Chateau Thierry and really went to town on the Boche, we would have still been in the same muddle as we are now had that continued on. Well, this is me, Sergeant L.W. Gobb, number 420-622, 10th London Regiment, 175 Brigade, 58th Division. That's Hubert Gough's division, one of the finest generals who was much maligned and who was left, is what we call the Forgotten Army. And I consider that he was one of the finest generals there. He was relieved of his command, but I was proud to be a member of his army. Thank you. I think one incident in our training is worthy of mention. We were stationed in Ipswich, being billeted in the town where the people were the very essence of kindness, and many of the troops married local girls. It happened at the time of the Zeppelin raids over East Anglia and concerned a newly built mansion which was nearing completion on the banks of the Orwell. And it was reported that lights had been seen coming from the tower of the building, which could have been signals to hostile aircraft. At this time, I was in charge of the signal section and had been detailed to take some of my men to the mansion and occupy it during the hours of darkness. We were issued out with live ammunition, and our signal officer was making observation from the tower while we stood guard at the head of the huge staircase leading to the tower. On the third night of our tour of duty, my lance corporal and myself were on guard with fully loaded rifles when we heard stealthy footsteps creeping up the staircase. We were fully alerted, and as the intruders were nearing the top, my lance corporal suddenly shouted his challenge, "Halt! Who goes there?" This being followed by a clatter of feet running down the stairs into the darkness of the grounds below.